This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and that's Tom McDermott playing our theme song this week. McDermott is a piano player who takes his jazz as quickly as possible.
I don't like modern jazz solos that go on for 18 minutes. You know, it's just Charlie Parker isn't around anymore. You know, maybe by the time you're done, it's 12 minutes is gone. You'll never get back.
Tom McDermott stands tall among New Orleans piano players because he keeps his songs short. Why?
Maybe I'm not very deep. I don't know.
Tom McDermott, the soul of brevity, after the break. In the mid-1980s, Tom McDermott arrived in New Orleans from St. Louis. And despite the passing years, the recordings, the countless bandstands, he still seems like a child prodigy. McDermott dresses like a character in the novel Catcher in the Rye. Khaki pants, blazer, cap on his head. But what makes him interesting to music lovers and the HBO series Tremé, in which he appears, is that Tom McDermott is a merry old soul, and a merry old soul is he. His piano style dates back to the 1870s. Every song is a set piece, a memory, a love. Listening to a song McDermott wrote called Sweetly Awakened. We're visiting with Tom McDermott at his house, and more importantly, at his piano in New Orleans. Thanks so much for having us over.
Oh, thanks for coming.
You've got a great book collection here. I would never have thought that you would own Jazz for Dummies.
Yes, Jazz for Dummies. I don't know how I got it. No, it was a remainder copy, so at least I didn't pay too much for it.
And so are these just reference books, or do you actually read most of them? You know, from cover to cover, the Duke Ellington memoir, the...
Most of the music books you see I have read, I would say, yeah. Yeah, not the Harvard Dictionary of Music, but...
but maybe the Yale
but
one.
But all the Gary Giddens and Tom Piazza books, for sure.
You know, when Van Cliburn died, the great classical pianist, in his obit, there's a wonderful story about what an influence his mother was.
I read that obit, and I was really surprised that he had her as his main teacher up until way past the typical story would be is a... You'd have your mother for, you know, up till age 7, 8, 9, 10. Then you'd find they'd realize you were a genius and they'd give you to the best pianist in town.
Yeah. But you kind of have a similar story, don't you? I mean, started young.
Yeah. My mom was a piano player and I studied with her sister, my aunt. I heard, a lot of classical music growing up. My mom was a proper, you know, Kansas City woman. But she also played ragtime. She played... novelty ragtime. St. Louis was the capital of that type of nostalgia. St. Louis was the first place where ragtime flourished in a major urban center. And if you were going to be exposed to ragtime as a kid, that would be the place for it to happen.
You know, obviously, St. Louis, New Orleans, both of these cities are defined by the river, the Mississippi. And, having lived in both of them, can you tell us what the similarities are and what the differences are? Culturally speaking,
similarities are there's a core of great architecture that's still around in both cities. But aside from that solid historical past, there isn't much in common. St. Louis has none of the Latinate influence that New Orleans has. It's a very Germanic Irish city. You know, you think of Budweiser and such. Beer and shoes was... was what St. Louis had. So, it's a very, very conservative place. I put it solidly in the list of second string American cities, you know, not up there with New Orleans or New York or San Francisco, of course, but...
Well, tell us how you really feel, Tom, you know?
Well, I thought about it a lot.
I see.
It's just more spread out. Like here, it's very easy to find music to go to four clubs in one day.
That's so true. Well, yeah, yeah, in like 1 hour sometimes.
Yeah.
Is there any piece of music that you can remember that, that takes you back to those early years in St. Louis that, and maybe that inspired you to want to become a musician?
Oh, probably the Maple Leaf Rag.
Can you play a little bit for us?
Let's see. Yeah, I'll play a bit. Play the first two strains. How about that?
Okay.
There you go. First half of it.
That was lovely.
Thank you. You're welcome.
You know, you hum a little bit when you play.
I do.
It's very attractive.
Ah, boy. I don't hear that too often, but...
It kind of brings out, I don't know, there's a childlike quality in you. I don't know why. Mm. You know, when I see you play, I can kind of imagine you playing at 6 or 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. And so here you are a kid, high school, college, whatever, but yeah. And your head is in ragtime.
I got into the Joplin Revival just a little bit before the Sting hit. It started 2 or 3 years before.
Before the movie, you mean?
Before the movie, yeah. I remember being thrilled at the albums by a guy named Joshua Rifkin coming out and solo piano albums of Joplin rags. And I immediately went out and bought a book and started learning. Probably learned about 60 rags total. I just never much got into pop music. I was a big Beatles fan early on. Mm-hmm. But I had older brothers, including a brother Dan, who was a fantastic string player who turned me on to Doc Watson and bluegrass and the Grateful Dead and eventually Irish fiddle music and even, classical music on guitar. So I heard a lot at it's like being in New Orleans in a way. I didn't hear brass bands, I didn't hear funk, but I heard a lot of music anyway.
You know, one of the albums that you put out, it was called Louisiana Anthology.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a survey of Louisiana music over the years. And it starts with the oddest selection, which is Stars and Stripes Forever.
Yeah.
I haven't heard Stars and Stripes Forever since MASH went off the air. Went off TV. There.
Well, I like John Philip Sousa. You know, it's the root of brass band music in a way. You could say, if nothing else, he was the greatest composer for brass bands. I later on recorded it as a duet with Matt Perrine. I like anybody who can write melody like that, whether it's, you know, him or Strauss waltzes or Chopin or Scott Joplin or Jobim or the Beatles. That's really what I'm attracted to.
Melody.
Yes.
Ah, boy. They don't call it Stars and Stripes sometimes. That's Matt Perrine on sousaphone and Tom McDermott on piano with Stars and Stripes Forever. Coming up, New Orleans standards get a Brazilian wax. Stay tuned. It's Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're talking with Tom McDermott, piano player extraordinaire. This is his ode to fellow musician Dr. John, a.k.a. Mac Rebinac. The song is called Rebinacking. Thank you. before Tom McDermott wrote the song Rubbernakin, back when he was writing music reviews for a St. Louis newspaper, he converted to New Orleans piano. The siren songs of Dr. John, Professor Longhair, and James Booker lured McDermott downriver. It also helped that by the mid-1980s, life in St. Louis was drying up.
I lost my newspaper gig in St. Louis, and my girlfriend kicked me out of my apartment. And so, and by then I'd visited New Orleans three or four times and was really, you know, really enjoying it. So I really think it was just meant for me to move here.
Definitely.
And so it happened. Yeah.
You're one of the few who create original compositions that add to the songbook of New Orleans. Others outside of New Orleans sometimes see this area as kind of a museum of culture more than, more than a thriving, growing music scene. Have you ever run into that mode of thinking?
I just ignore it when I do, because I've visited many parts of the world and I know the relative worth of the scenes, and this is one of the better ones. That is a problem for New Orleans in that there's not new music added. What is more likely is you get people reinterpreting old tunes in a new way, or what I did on Chora de Noche, taking Joplin rags and Jelly Roll and playing them with Brazilian musicians. Twisted somehow. I recorded Blueberry Hill.
Yes.
But instead of doing, you know, and then singing over it, getting somebody else to singing over it, I put a different 12/8 rhythm on it, which was like, so that's sort of a boogie woogie. I think boogie woogie had a lot of effect on me, and a lot of what I do is very left hand based. I played a lot of solo piano in my life.
Okay.
And let me play a little Tennessee Waltz, but I put a Cuban triple meter rhythm with it. And I don't know what you call this rhythm, but I did hear it in Cuba. Thank you.
cetera. Yeah.
But Patty Page wouldn't be able to do anything with that.
No, but, you know, Celia Cruz might be able to, you know.
That's true. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Why don't you sing? You hum.
I'm a shy guy. I've tried a little bit. People were polite. And not all my sidemen were polite, but the audience was polite. I certainly have lost some gigs over the years by not being able to do it. But I've always felt like the right gig just fell in my lap at the right time.
Mm. Okay, well, here's a spoiled person's question. Why are your songs so short?
Maybe I'm not very deep. I don't know. There's something to be said for being compact, though. I don't like modern jazz solos that go on for 18 minutes. You know, it's just Charlie Parker isn't around anymore. You know, they're, I mean, maybe by the time you're done, it's 12 minutes is gone. You'll never get back. What is more interesting to me and what I've done with people like Evan Christopher.
The great clarinetist.
Yes, the fantastic player is worked on these tunes like Sousa marches, like choros, like musettes. They have three or four sections, and if you get tired of improvising on one, you go to another one.
You know, the word choro,
yeah,
which you use very liberally, and those who are in music use very liberally, but which is not used liberally just in regular American vernacular, it's a Portuguese or a Brazilian Portuguese word for lament. Is that
true?
Yeah,
a cry.
Uh-huh.
Older than our ragtime, actually goes back to the 1870s. Brazil just it's not unhip to play choros. Whereas it is unhip to play ragtime, you know, or even traditional jazz outside of New Orleans.
What is the connection, though, between choro music and New Orleans music?
Nothing, really. I was the first guy to connect the two, as far as I know. Now, on the other hand, Booker recorded Tico Tico.
James Booker.
Which was a choro. Tico Tico is about the only choro to have made it into the American consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
There was another piece called Delicado, which Dr. John recorded on Dr. John Plays Mac Rebinac. So that is about it.
Makes a song a choro?
Well, typically the instrumentation would be clarinet or flute,
lead, and then a cavaquinho, which is like kind of like a ukulele, and a pandero for the rhythm, which is like a tambourine, but played totally different from the way we play a tambourine, and then a seven-string guitar playing bass lines. Mm. And the form is much like rags and marches and musettes. I kind of reduce it as a piano soloist just to this rhythm.
Doesn't that sound like Happy Fingers? Casa Denisi is a choro from Tom McDermott. For a complete playlist of songs in this hour or any hour of Music Inside Out, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And by all means, friend us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Coming up, television pays the bills. Stay tuned. It's Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Our guest is Tom McDermott, who's not only a gifted piano player, but he's also a composer, a music writer, and an actor. Anyone who follows the HBO series Tremé has seen McDermott play the role he was born to play. Literally, McDermott appears as himself.
Hey, Annie.
Hey, Tom.
I have a private gig tonight, and I could use a fiddle on a couple tunes. I was wondering, you read music, huh?
Yeah.
Check this out. It's a couple Jelly Roll Morton tunes I'd like you to play on.
When I think about you, I've always thought of you as a modern-day Hoagy Carmichael.
Oh.
In the sense that you...
What a compliment.
Yeah, you compose music, you act just as Hoagy Carmichael did, you know.
Well,
I mean, not with, you know, Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart.
We'll see if that goes beyond Tremé. I had my 5 or 6 appearances.
Well, it's true, but, you know, it's pretty wonderful. And the thing that Carmichael always said was that you don't write melodies, you find them.
Yeah.
If you find the beginning of a good song, and if your fingers do not stray, the melody should come out of hiding in a short time.
Yes, that makes sense. And it's an extension. You find what Germans would call a motif. And for instance, Casa Denisi, the motif is. So I do that first in B flat. And then I do it in F7. Then I do it in D7. But then I don't continue it. I then finally in C. With the high point being the second to the last phrase, the penultimate phrase is where the melody climaxes. Somebody told me that at one point, and I find it's often true. So it's a good tip for songwriters. You got to reach a climax and then recede. So you have a chance to tail off.
Like for a denouement or something.
You're
writing music like a Shakespearean play.
Yeah, and so many notes. Yeah, much fewer notes.
Let me ask you, why do you suppose your song Summer goes down so well?
My formula is simple melody, but interesting harmony. And so in Summer, you have the melody is very simple. But underneath it, you have a counterpoint. About it is you don't know if it's in major or minor because it is technically a major just with a lot of blue notes in there. So that would be my short answer. I'm glad you like it.
I do. So let me ask you this. I mean, Tom, your liner notes are terrific on the albums that you've put out, particularly on the album that's called All the Keys and then some, the 24 Pieces for Piano. On that album, you wrote a composition for every major and minor key on the piano, and you explained it this way. You wrote, "Musicians, especially those who play in only one idiom, tend to play in the same handful of keys their whole lives. Playing in one of the lesser used keys, a G-sharp minor, for instance, is a bit like visiting a cousin you knew existed but had never bothered to get to know." That's
like
great
that.
Writing.
Good.
I love that.
Well, it's true, and I don't think I've gone back to that key since I wrote that piece, but it was a great exercise, and I recommend it to anybody who wants to stretch their ears.
What does that key sound like? What does the G sharp minor?
I don't know if I'm playing that right, but there you go.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah. Well, they're all nice. They're all nice, especially the ones you don't hear so often. But for instance, most jazz cats play in G through D flat,
yeah.
which is half the circle. Most of them in New Orleans might be C, F, B flat. And I'm as guilty as anybody when I play my trad jazz gigs. You know, I play a lot of songs in F, you know, so it was good for me to write a piece in every key.
This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and we're talking at Tom McDermott's house, and we're making him play piano for us. I wanted to talk a bit about the injury that broke your wrist, your left wrist.
Yes.
Was it? Tell us what happened.
Oh, I just fell off a porch in the dark.
No way.
Way. It's been a while now. It's healed mostly. I still have a click in it, but it doesn't bother me.
Well, I mean, this seems to be the fear of any musician, you know,
it
to
happens.
Be compromised.
It happened to my mom. It happened to James Booker.
Really?
You know? Yeah.
Incredible. You know what I mean? So how do you compensate? How did you compensate, you know, in your situation where your wrist was broken?
I did gigs. I remember I did gigs with Jim Singleton playing bass, and I would play one-hand piano.
Wow.
And we pulled it off. And I did throw in a, you know, every once in a while, just to, it was really hard to play left hand while I had my cast on. But shortly after the cast came off, I was playing solo piano again.
Gee, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a video once of Tom Waits playing a tango in which he was slapping the keys.
He's a ruffian that way, but he can play very, you know, standard piano too.
Very tenderly, well. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, talk a little bit about just the basic truisms of the aging process when it comes to musicians, particularly with regard to piano. Everybody ages, and your fingers are aging just as fast as any other part of you.
Yeah. I'm lucky in that my hands are okay, even with the fracture. I have tinnitus right now.
Mm.
That's a real problem for a lot of musicians. I didn't get it through loud noise like a lot of musicians did, but I feel very fortunate that I've been able to concentrate on making albums and not have to take every gig that was offered my way, although I've taken most of them. Until recently. Now, finally, I've seemed to be able to turn down $100 gigs, you know, which is, you know, when I came here in 84, that's what the pay was, $100. It's a real problem.
$100 for the whole night?
Yeah. I'm in a interesting position right now because I am making gigs and playing gigs, duet gigs, because I have a strong left hand and can pull it off without a bass and drums. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Chickiwawa. Thank you very much for coming out. I'm Tom McDermott. Now please welcome Mishia Lee.
I'm gonna live the life that I sing about in my soul. I'm gonna stand up for right and always shun the wrong. If I'm in a crowd, if I'm alone, if I'm in the street or in my home, yeah, I gotta live the life that I sing about here in my song. Every day, everywhere, on that busy thoroughfare, folk may watch me, some may mock me, say I'm a fool, but I don't care. I can't sing one thing and live another, be a saint by day and a devil undercover. I'm gonna live the life that I sing about, yeah, in my soul. Every day, every night. I must always walk in the light. Some mistake me, underrate me, because I want to do what's right. I can't go to church and shout all day Sunday, go out, get drunk and raise hell on a Monday. I gotta live that life I sing about in my song.
Mashiach Lake. She has face tats, and she looks otherwise like a, you know, like the little girl from North Dakota she is. But then this Bessie Smith voice comes out, and it's people are floored by it.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the women like to play with you.
Well,
see, that's the Hoagy Carmichael in you.
You know, if the right people are on the gig, I do certain gigs, as most musicians, for just no guarantee, just because I want to play with them.
Yes.
I think most musicians would say that. May I make a plug?
Please do.
60s legendary guy named Van Dyke Parks is producing a Best of McDermott CD called Bamboula. And hopefully it'll get in the hands of some LA music people, because that's where the money is to get the stuff in, you know, TV, as I found out from Treme.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is it a live album
No, it's all tracks that have been put out before, except for one that concentrates on the Choro and the Musettes and that kind of exotic stuff. So,
well, it's very atmospheric, that music,
you know, thank you.
It does lend itself, I would say,
thank you.
To cinema and television. You know, the HBO series Treme is wrapping up at this point here right. in New Orleans, and this is going to be represent a change for a lot of musicians. You yourself had songs that were featured in the series.
I did. Mm-hmm.
And can you talk a little bit about what that series has meant to New Orleans musicians?
Well, I think, first of all, the fact that they spent $1 million per year on songwriters, on paying mechanical royalties for songs used. I mean, that's pretty staggering.
Absolutely. So. But what does it do in terms of, internally, you know, to know that, that people are honoring what you do?
Oh, I think it felt really good. I remember when the first episodes were airing and there was argument online about, well, you know, why aren't they featuring dentists and doctors and lawyers? Well, they did feature a lawyer, maybe dentists and doctors and plumbers, you know, and I had to write. You know, I rarely engage in the blogosphere, but I said, look, of course we need those things in this town, but it's the music and the food and the architecture. It's what makes this place what it is. People don't come here for the plumbing, for the dentistry, you know? So, and it's about time that somebody noticed that and, you know, really brought it home, you know, and those guys did. And I think in a lot of instances, they really hit a home run.
We're coming to the end of our time together,
yeah.
And I've enjoyed every second of it. I kind of wish I had a piano so you can come home and play it with me. But I'm going to give you a choice for an ender, and you tell me what you'd like.
Yeah, let me play. I'll play a quick version of Atrapado.
Okay. Thank you. Tom McDermott, thank you so much for playing for us and for having us over.
And you're very welcome. Thank you.
Tom McDermott spoke to us from his home in New Orleans. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Sean Collins, Jason Rhine, and Margaret Howes. WWNO is our production partner. Jason Saul keeps the station's website so nice. The general manager of WWNO is Paul Mawson. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Music Inside Out is underwritten by the Historic New Orleans Collection, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and WWNO. For more information on how you can support our program, go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.
This week, the last word goes to Tom McDermott. Here's the title song from his best of album called Bamboula. Thank you.